Good morning. Who is God? What comes to your mind when you first hear that question? Do you think of a grandfather-like figure that's there in the clouds, blowing the west wind across the land, sprinkling rains down on the land, or turning up the brightness of the sun on some while turning up the dimmer switch on others? Perhaps you don't see God like this. Maybe you see God as a tyrant who stands ready to curse anyone who gets out of line. Or maybe you don't see God in either of these lights. Maybe you see God as that grandfatherly figure that could never tell his grandkids no. That grandfatherly figure that will always bend and twist to the wants and desires of his children and grandchildren. For some, God is a fairy tale, so to speak. They believe in him like they believe in Santa Claus or the Tooth Fairy. They may say they believe in God, but it's only because they've been conditioned to do so in order to not lose the magic, so to speak. I'm sure there are many other misconceptions about who God is. In fact, we could ask many that question, who is God, and would probably come up with as many different answers as we have people to ask. If you know who God is, how did you learn of him? Did your parents tell you about God? Did you hear about him maybe on the TV or on the radio? Or have you always felt that there is a God? Has there always been this feeling within you that somewhere there is a creator that created everything we see? If someone told you about God, it is because someone told them, and they were once told by someone else. However, somewhere, someone had to know who God is. Fortunately for us, God made himself known to his creation, and he allowed those to inform others. When we open our Bibles, we're holding a message that came directly from God. We think about the Bible, most people think about it as just another book of a bunch of old writings by a bunch of old people, old guys that are outdated. But in reality, we're holding something that literally came from God himself. 2 Timothy chapter 3 and verse 16. 2 Timothy chapter 3 and verse 16 says, "All scripture is given by inspiration of God and is profitable for doctrine, for reproof, for correction, for instruction in righteousness, that the man of God may be complete, truly furnished unto all good works." God not only made himself known to his creation, but he made his will for mankind known as well. The very first line of the inspired word, Genesis chapter 1 and verse 1, Genesis chapter 1 and verse 1, it says, "In the beginning, God created the heaven and the earth." We can back up that heaven and earth, or the made heaven and earth, created the heaven and earth. Take that off of there and just look at that first part. In the beginning, God. In the beginning, God. Moses wrote these words as he was inspired by the Creator. If you'll notice, it doesn't say, once upon a time, a long time ago, there was a Creator who began to create the world. Or he'd been around forever and he decided he wanted to create some things. So he's all powerful, he's all knowing, he's everywhere. He is God. It doesn't say that. It simply says, in the beginning, God. The fact is, the first line of the Bible matter-of-factly states that God is. God needs no introduction. The people of the earth from the beginning knew God existed and never questioned it. It says, in the beginning, God. Nobody interrupted. Whoa, 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 wait a minute. Who are you talking about here? Everyone knew exactly who he was talking about. In the beginning, God. They knew God existed. They never questioned it. The first line of the Bible begins not with who God is, but with what God does. And this says a lot about who he is. Psalm 19 and verse 1. Psalm 19 and verse 1. It tells us, we've heard this passage many times, Psalm 19, verse 1, the heavens declare the glory of God, and the sky above proclaims His handiwork. We look at that and was like, that's a pretty easy passage to understand. The heavens declare the glory of God. When we stare up into the vastness of the night sky, we can't help but be amazed at the number of stars that are there. And if you know a little bit about the skies and about the planets and those things, you'll know that there, you can see some of the planets and you can pick them out. What's more amazing, you think about this, all the stars. When this was written, there was no such thing as super telescopes. There wasn't even mediocre telescopes. Yet the people of antiquity were skilled at reading the sky. They understood the stars meant something. They were there for them. They used the stars as maps to get them across the seas and to traverse across the seas. And they would always be there. Unless it was cloudy, whenever the stars were visible, they were there. It wasn't like, wait a minute, that one was over here yesterday. They were there. They were skilled at reading the sky to tell the weather. Also, Luke chapter 12, verse 56. Luke chapter 12, verse 56. Ye hypocrites, you can discern the face of the sky and of the earth, but how is it that you do not discern time? So, God has made everything that He made here, and He made man on the planet, and everything that He made was basically made for man. A proving ground, if you will. God built it, designed it, engineered it, put it in place, put man on it, and said, here it is. The heavens declare the glory of God, and the sky above proclaims His handiwork. They do so by His magnificence. We marvel at the complexity of God's creation. We stand in awe at His creative genius. Yet in all of this, the moon, the stars, the clouds, the whole heavens are silent when it comes to proclaiming who God is. They declare His handiwork, but they're silent when it comes to defining God. We tend to think that since we read in the Bible that God created us in His image, we have a tendency to think that we are just like Him. Well, He created us, and we're just like Him. Everything else on the planet is less because we're just like Him. Well, in a sense, we are created like Him, and we are the pinnacle of His creation. But we sometimes think that we walk like Him, and we talk like Him. We sometimes believe that we think like Him, and we act like Him. The truth is, we couldn't even know Him if it wasn't for Him telling us who He is or telling us about Himself. Isaiah chapter 55, verses 8 and 9. Isaiah chapter 55, verses 8 and 9. He says here, for my thoughts are not your thoughts, neither are your ways my ways, declares the Lord. For as the heavens are higher than the earth, so are my ways higher than your ways, and my thoughts than your thoughts. God is not making a arrogant statement here and saying, here's where I am, I'm up here and you're down there. What He's saying is you don't understand. My thoughts are so much higher than your thoughts and my ways higher than your ways that you can't comprehend them. You ever talk to a child and try to explain something to them? Or not even a child, sometimes even adults. Why can't you understand what I'm trying to tell you? They don't get it. They don't get it. And you'll try. Then you end up thinking of a Bible verse, cast not your pearls before swine. They're not going to listen. They're not going to listen. Sometimes it is that they just don't understand. And sometimes we look at passages in the Bible and people just, they can't understand it. Why can't they understand it? They're still growing. There comes a point where we look at this and we think, where are our thoughts about God? What is it that we think about Him? If my thoughts are from the heavens to the earth, lower than His thoughts, then my thoughts are pretty low. And speaking of Jesus, the Ephesian writer says in Ephesians chapter 4, verses 10 through 14, Ephesians chapter 4, verses 10 through 14, He that descended is the same also that ascended up far above the heavens, that He might fill all things. And he gave some apostles and some prophets and some evangelists and some pastors and teachers. Ephesians chapter 4, verses 10 through 14. For the perfecting of the saints, for the work of the ministry, for the edifying of the body of Christ, till we all come in the unity of the faith and of the knowledge of the Son of God, unto a perfect man, unto the measure of the stature of the fullness of Christ, that we henceforth be no more children tossed to and fro and carried about with every wind of doctrine by the sleight of men and the cunning craftiness whereby they lie in wait to deceive, but speaking the truth in love may grow up unto him in all things, which is the head, even Christ. It's a little bit of a long passage there, but it shows that God has revealed himself through the apostles, the prophets, the evangelists, the pastors, and the teachers to go and to spread the news about God so that we would no longer be tossed to and fro from one false doctrine to another. And it also shows here that while God explains who he is and shows to the apostles who he is, there are men out there that would go and try to change that. They would go and try to deceive others into thinking something different. Listen to James chapter 5 and verse 17. James chapter 5 and verse 17. It says, Elias was a man subject to like passions as we are, and he prayed earnestly that it might not rain, and it rained not on the earth by the space of 3 years and 6 months. And we think we're having a dry spell? Somebody might think that Elias is out there still praying, and that's why we haven't had any rain. We know that Elias had really nothing to do with the stopping of the rain. He just knew who to contact to get the rain to stop. Elias knew that he could go to God and God would have the power to do this. And he solicited God to stop the rain and it stopped. That's a long time. 3 years and 6 months. Look at Genesis chapter 7 and verse 12. Genesis chapter 7 and verse 12. And the rain was upon the earth 40 days and 40 nights. These two instances are nowhere near related to one another, but they show some great contrast. While God has the power to stop the rain for 3 years or 10 years or whatever he wants, he also has the power to not stop the rain, as we see in Genesis 7:12. When we think of the magnificence of God's power, the ability to make it not rain for 3 years and 6 months or to make it rain for 40 days and nights straight, we naturally consider these things as acts of God. Of course that's going to happen. Of course God has control of that. He spun the earth into existence and controls all of that right now. He's the one that's in control. That's our mindset. He's the one that controls these things. If we get rain, it's because God said we'd get rain. If we don't, it's because God said we don't. In other words, whenever it stops raining or starts raining, we automatically assume that's just something that God is in control of. But what about Joshua chapter 10 and verse 13? Joshua chapter 10 and verse 13 says, And the sun stood still, and the moon stayed until the people had avenged themselves upon their enemies. Is not this written in the book of Jasher? So the sun stood still in the midst of heaven and hasted not to go down about a whole day. Again, when we think of this, we think of things like this, we automatically assume, well, that's again something that God is already controlling in the first place. He's already set those things in motion. He controls whether they continue in motion. What about our clothes? Strange question, right? We make our clothing out of cotton or wool or whatever synthetic materials, whatever they are. Some are strong, some are weak, some last a long time, some not so much. In fact, if you keep your garments more than a few years, they will start to wear out. Even if you don't wear them, they'll start to begin to dry rot and they'll start to fail and they'll be easy to tear or easy to tear apart. The Bible talks about some of that when they were talking about their wineskins. The old ones would break because they're old and worn out. Imagine if you only had one set of clothes. Imagine if it was that you only had the clothes that you have on your back today. Nothing else. That is all you had. And that is all you had to wear every single day from now on. How long do you suppose they would last? And if they did wear out, would you say something like, well, God controls whether they wear out or not, so I guess he decided it was time for them to wear out? Or would you say something more like, well, I got a pretty good use out of these. Look how long they've lasted. I mean, for something I've been wearing every day, they've lasted a pretty long time. Well, believe it or not, God is even in control of that. If you'll remember when Moses, God had Moses lead the Israelites out of Egyptian bondage, and because of their stubbornness and because of their sin, that they were made to wander in the wilderness for 40 years. Now, if you look at Deuteronomy chapter 29 and verse 5, Deuteronomy chapter 29 and verse 5, it says, "And I have led you 40 years in the wilderness. Your clothes are not waxing old upon you, and thy shoes is not waxing old upon thy foot." Their clothes didn't wear out for 40 years. Now, this is not like the earth turning or the rain, the clouds blowing in and all of that. This is something that we put together out of cotton or whatever. We put it together, and God didn't allow it to wear out on those people. This is not something we would naturally think that God is in control of. We serve a God that is in control of literally every single thing that we could possibly dream up. He can stop time, flood the earth, dry the earth. I know I've mentioned this before. Doug has a saying that when it's really, really dry, it might be getting close because God might be just drying everything out here on the earth so it'll burn better. I heard a story a comedian told, and forgive me if I've used this illustration before. A comedian told a story about, he called his insurance company. He said, "I'd like to buy some fire insurance." And the man told him, he said, "Well, we don't sell fire insurance. I can sell you flood insurance." The man said, "Well, I don't know how to start a flood." When you think of fire, do you ever think that it's something that God is in control of? Well, if I ask that question, you say, lightning, right? Because lightning strikes, a God is in control of that, and that starts fire. In fact, I've heard tell that's how people first started fire. I don't believe all that. I believe that God gave man, and when he created man, God had made Adam and Eve with, the full system download. They knew how to do things that we don't give them credit for. Is God in control? We start fires. We have fires that start by faulty electric systems that we designed or we put in. We have fires that start from mixing chemicals together that we mix ourselves. There are all types of fires. However, there's one fire that we've never experienced or one fire that we've never been able to explain, and that's seen in Exodus chapter 3 and verse 2. Exodus chapter 3 and verse 2, it says, "And the angel of the Lord," and you're familiar with this story, "the angel of the Lord appeared unto him in a flame in the fire out of the midst of a bush. And he looked, and behold, the bush burned with fire, and the bush was not consumed." Okay, so here's Moses on the mountain, and he sees this bush on fire. What do you do when you see something on fire? You ever be driving down the road and you see a fire on the side of the road, the median's on fire? What's the first thing you look for? Is anybody there to control it? If not, you stop and you call 911, or you start looking for somebody to help to put it out, or you start stomping it out or whatever. Moses, we're not talking about an interstate highway with modern vehicles driving down it. We're talking about a mountain. And Moses up there on that mountain, and all of a sudden there's a bush on fire. And there's something about this bush that's on fire. It's not just that somebody, lightning must have struck and lit this bush on fire. And what happened is he looks and this bush is on fire. The angel of the Lord appeared to him out of the fire, out of the flame in the bush. And the bush was not consumed. If you really think of what's going on here, God started the bush on fire, and then he's taken the power of the fire away from it to consume the bush. Or he's either done that, or he's given the bush power to resist the fire. One or the other, the bush is not burned, and God's in control. Our God is an awesome God who needs no instruction. Our God is an awesome God who needs no defense against the gainsayers or unbelievers. Our God is an awesome God who needs us less than we'll ever know, and who we need more than we'll ever admit. Acts chapter 17, verses 24 through 27. Acts chapter 17, verses 24 through 27. It says here, "God that made the world and all things therein." That's enough right there. "God that made the world and all things therein, seeing that he is Lord of heaven and earth, dwelleth not in temples made with hands, neither is worshipped with men's hands, as though he needed anything, seeing he giveth life to all, and breath, and all things, and hath made of one blood all nations of men, for to dwell on the face of the earth, and hath determined the times before appointed, and the bounds of their habitation, that they should seek the Lord, if haply they might feel after him and find him, though he be not far from every one of us. For in him we live and move and have our being, as certain also of your own poets have said, for we are also his offspring. Our God is an awesome God who made the world and everything in it, from the lifeless rock to the most complex DNA blueprint. Perhaps it is that you don't know God. Perhaps it is that you don't know who he is. Maybe you've never given yourself the chance to get to know him. Or maybe you think you really know God and know who he is, but have never really stopped to get to know him. Maybe it's time to get to know him. Maybe it's time to open your Bible and really do a heartfelt study and see who God really is. Search on who he is. I know there are people who have their lives wrapped up in celebrities or sports figures. They can tell you the stats. They can tell you who's who. They find a favorite and they become enamored with that person. They read all their stats, when they were born, when they graduated high school, where they went to college, who they married, what their kids' names are, how old they are, all of their accomplishments, what they've done, what they've contributed to, what they've said, what their quotes are. Yet they don't know who God is. Our God is an awesome God, and he's given us a book written about his creation and how he dealt with those who obeyed him and how he dealt with those who didn't obey him. Isaiah 55 and verse 9, as the heavens are higher than the earth, so are my ways higher than your ways and my thoughts higher than your thoughts. There are things about God that we will never know. There are things about God that are past our understanding. But those things that he wants us to know have been placed at our fingertips, given to us right there. Our Creator. People want to know, why am I here? Where did I come from? It's all right here. God has given all of this to us so that we can know who he is. Once you get to know him, you won't be able to keep yourself from introducing him to others. And you will want to get to know him better. If you have any need, the message is yours. Won't you come while together we stand and sing the song that's been selected? There's a-